I'll take again just a few minutes before our session to tell you about some of the books and tapes that are back on the table. Again, my reason for doing so is because I believe that unless you kind of know what is back there, it's very difficult for you to choose what you might be interested in. First of all, let me mention to you that if you were not among the first several back there to get the Bill McDonald commentary, some of you recognize a good bargain when you hear one, because the price of $25 is cheaper than the bookstores buy them for. But we buy them literally by the hundreds. And I think so far we've probably distributed, I'm going to say, close to 10 or 12,000 of those commentaries. So if you still want one for $25, I'll have to charge you $3 shipping to get it to you. And I think that'll still be cheaper than the $40 bookstore price. You'll put your name and address, put on there Bill's commentary, or just whole Bible commentary, and we'll ship those to you. You should have it in about a week after we get back home. So you can just fill out that little sheet that looks like this. Same way with the Nest videos. I'll be happy to help you look at the catalog, because they're all gone, and I can help you. I'll show you how to make that order. And actually, if I just have your name and address where to ship it to, which video you want, we can take care of the rest of those, because there's so many options in the catalog that I get confused. And so we'll just put those on the sheet. Today, this morning, we're going to shift gears a little bit. I want to speak to you about Russia and China. And you can put any country you want to in there. I don't make it as a threat to my family, but the first day you hear that Cuba's opened up to Americans, well, look for me down there. And there are other countries that I think when God opens the door, I really believe that He has blessed this country in such a way that we should be going wherever we have the opportunity. Because if we don't, I can promise you this, the cults will be there. The cults will be there. And for every believer that went to Russia, there was probably 1,000 Mormons that went. And today, as we sit and talk, Russia is going to the Muslims. And so, if you're interested in missionary ideas and so on, there's a little tape back in the basket called A Fate Worse Than Death. It will give you more details than we'll have time to do in our session. And if you're interested in details on China, there's one called Charting a Course. And that is another one that's back in the basket. Now, I don't think my sign was very clear, and I apologize for that, but there are two books back there. One is called Can You Know Your Future? One is called The God of the Jews Must Die. And those books are 3 for $10. My point really is that if you buy several of those, you won't keep them all, but you'll give them out. I think $3.33 for a book is about as cheap as you'll find it anywhere in this country. I hope it's cheap enough that you say, I can afford to give one away. Because time and time again, we do see people come to know Christ. Let me tell you a little bit about this book, The God of the Jews Must Die. I won't try to explain the title. I don't want to ruin the story for you. But a friend of mine wrote this book. He's actually a professional golfer. He got interested in Bible prophecy, threatened to write a book, and I said, go ahead. One of the worst things I've ever done in my life is to write books. But he wrote a book, and maybe the thing that got me the most was, the introduction of the book goes something like this. The story you're about to read is true, or could be. It's a fictional book. It's a story. What will it be like in the tribulation? What will it be like once Christ has come and believers are gone? And this book, I find it to be very good in allowing you to understand what will take place in the tribulation. For example, the Bible says that the water will turn to blood. So in the tribulation, what will you drink? Someone always says Pepsi. That's a pretty good answer. But then how do you shower? Don't tell me Pepsi. I mean, think about the problems that are described in the book of Revelation that will occur in the tribulation. And it talks about the acceptance of people toward the Antichrist. How will he actually present himself, and how will people give themselves over to him? This book presents a very logical way for that to occur. When Brad wrote the book, he tried to pervert the Ten Commandments in the most diabolical way that he could. To his surprise, since he wrote the book just several years ago, six of the ten have already occurred. That's how fast we're going downhill. As a matter of fact, in the back of the book, you'll find a list of things that I think is very helpful. Bible prophecies fulfilled, and it begins, and it gives you chapter and verse to document when these things have occurred. It gives the date and the chapter when, and we've added them, including the PLL Peace Treaty, September the 13th, 1993. There are 69 of them documented there. I remember when we gave this book to our junior high and high school students, the stir that it caused as they read this and began to see how terrible the tribulation really was. And maybe the best experience I ever had with the book was back home. There's a number of weightlifters, bodybuilders, who came to know the Lord. And there's one big fella, large guy, bulky guy. And I said to him, I said, Dave, I want you to read this book, but don't let your wife see it. You know what she did? She grabbed the book and says, what doesn't he want me to see it? All during my message, she read the book. Went home, couldn't put the book down. Matter of fact, no dinner that day. She finished the book in one day. He said, if that book is that good, I think I'll read it. And he read it in one day, and he confessed to me it's the first book he's read since high school. And I'll tell you what, we see a change in people's lives as they begin to read. What will it really be like in the tribulation for those that are left behind? So I think you'll find this a great book to give to young people as well as old people. And so those books are available at a special price back there. Another one called 666, The Mark is Ready. It will document even more details on some of the technology things that are available. This is by Dr. Weber. And then another one that I think you'll find very informative, John Ankerberg's book on Cult Watch. Again, I think this sells for about $18 in bookstores, $12 back there. But it takes them one by one, and it does everything from the New Age movement to the Mormon spirit guides, astrology, and so on and so on. And it just does them nice little chapter packages. It's not the kind of book that you read straight through, but it's a great reference book on some of the new cults that are out, and I think you'll find it very informative. So those are available for you back there. The story is told about two good friends. Their names were Huey and Louie. Huey wanted to buy a bull. And so he started saving his money so that he could buy a bull. And Louie just happened to have a fine bull. And after Huey had saved his money for some time, as a matter of fact, he'd saved $1,000, he asked Louie, he says, Louie, what would you sell your bull for? Louie said, $1,000. Oh, Huey said, you can't sell it for $1,000. That's all the money I've got. He said, surely being best friends, there ought to be some kind of a discount. And so after negotiation, finally, Huey was able to buy the bull for $999. And Louie, being a good friend, helped him load the bull into the back of his truck. And as Huey was driving home, he ran out of gas. And there he was, stuck with a truck with no gas and a bull in the back. But, you know, Huey was so smart, he knew that if he used his last dollar to put gas in the truck, it still wouldn't be enough gas to get home. Luckily, right across the street from where the truck stalled, there was a telegraph office, and so he went over there to send a telegram to another friend that he had. So he went into the telegraph office. He said, I need to send a telegram. He said, my truck is stalled, and I need to notify one of my friends so he can come and help me. The telegraph man said, well, you're welcome to send a telegram. It's a dollar a word. Well, Huey said, I've got to be very careful as I select my word. And so the man gave him a dictionary, and he began to search through the dictionary for a suitable word. And after some time, he said, all right, send this word. Well, the telegraph operator was anxious to see the word that he'd chosen, and the word was comfortable. The man says, why in the world would you send that word? He says, well, my friend is a slow reader, and he'll read it, come for the bull. Now, the reason I tell that story is because if I were asked to describe America and Canada with one word, you know what it would be? Comfortable. We're comfortable. You know, we don't like it if the temperature in the room gets above 75, turn on the air conditioner. And if the temperature gets below 68, turn on the heat. And we've got to have the drapes matching the carpet. And we've got to have the ties matching the suit. And we've got to have a pair of shoes for walking and for jogging and for dinner and for... My, we've got to be comfortable. our bed has to be just so, and our pillows have to be just right, and everything of, we're built for comfort, aren't we? And I really wonder if we haven't taken comfort and ease and pleasure to the extreme. You say, no, wait a minute. I think you got to go back and preach on Bible prophecy. You know, it doesn't do us any good to believe that Jesus is coming if it doesn't change how we live. And so today I want to spend at least this morning and maybe one other morning talking to you about some of the things that are going on in the world around us. And there is a story in the Bible that I think illustrates this so well. Turn with me to 2 Kings chapter 6. How comfortable are we? And would we dare be interrupted from our comfort? 2 Kings chapter 6, and we'll begin in the middle of the story, but I know you'll recognize the story. Verse 24, it says, "And it came to pass after this that Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, gathered all his host and went up and besieged Samaria." The Syrians were against the people of Israel. They besieged Samaria. Verse 25, "And there was a great famine in Samaria. And behold, they besieged it until an ass's head was sold for 80 pieces of silver and a fourth part of a cab of dove's dung for 5 pieces of silver." Have you ever been this hungry? I mean, can you imagine driving down the road and going into the Holiday House and say, what's the menu? And they say, you know, donkey head. It sounds good, doesn't it? Barbecue donkey head. Somehow it just doesn't make your saliva glands work. Or worse yet, dove's dung. Now we had a situation a year or two ago when we had 2 teenage boys and then another teenage Russian boy living with us. And, boy, you talk about raiding the refrigerator. And, you know, every once in a while, back where we live, Mexican food is the rage, you know, and they'd have these sales, 5 tacos for a dollar. So you give each kid $5, you know, he goes 25 tacos, and 2 hours later they come in the door and say, "What's for dinner?" I said, I thought you ate 25 tacos. "Yeah, that was a snack. Well, we want to, what's the main meal?" And it's incredible, isn't it? But I can just see their eyes when they come in and say, "Hey, what's for dinner?" You say, "Donkey head." Just doesn't stir your appetite, does it? Can you imagine people so hungry that they would pay an enormous sum of money for a donkey's head or for dove's dung? I don't care how hungry you are, a fourth part of a cab of dove's dung just could not be satisfying. Verse 26, it gets worse. "And as the king of Israel was passing by upon the wall, there cried a woman unto him, saying, 'Help my lord, O king.' And he said, 'If the Lord do not help thee, how shall I help thee? Out of the barn floor, out of the wine press?' He said, 'Listen,' he said, 'if you've prayed to God for food and he hasn't answered you, why would you talk to me?' He said, 'I'm only a king. I'm only the most powerful man in the city. How can I control food?'" Can you imagine starvation so bad that people go to that limit? Verse 28, "And the king said to her, 'What ails thee?' And she answered, 'This woman said unto me, Give thy son that we may eat him today, and we will eat my son tomorrow. So we boiled my son and ate him.'" Can you imagine starvation to that extent? Where people would actually eat their own children? We got the report last week of cannibalism in Russia. Where hunger is so acute in Russia that they're eating their children. Folks, that is where we are at in this world today. Can you imagine that kind of starvation? What must go through the mind of a person to eat their own child? And that was how hunger was there. Look at this. "And it came to pass," verse 30, "when the king heard the words of the woman that he tore his clothes, he passed by upon the wall. The people looked, and behold, he had sackcloth beneath upon his flesh. Then he said, 'God do so and more also to me if the head of Elisha.'" And he blames it on the prophet of God. Always blame your troubles on somebody else. Look at chapter 7, now verse 1. Now here's the prophet of God he was talking about. His name is Elisha. Then Elisha said, "Hear ye the word of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord, tomorrow about this time shall a measure of fine flour be sold for a shekel and two measures of barley for a shekel in the gate of Samaria." The prophet of God comes out and says, listen, I'm going to make a prediction. He said, I want you to know that within 24 hours, for one shekel, for one small amount of money, you'll be able to buy a whole measure of fine flour. Or if you want poor man's food, two measures of barley for the same amount. Now look what the answer is in verse 2. Then a lord on whose hand the king leaned, in other words, the right-hand man of the king, answered the man of God and said, behold, if the Lord would make windows in heaven, might this thing be? He said, if God were just to roll back heaven and pour grain out of heaven right into the city, you could not pour enough grain into this city to make it that cheap. All right, now look what he says. And he said, behold, thou shalt see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not eat it. You want a prophecy that God has made to be fulfilled in a marvelous way. It's not the point of my story today, but you read the entire chapter and you'll see how God fulfilled it literally and in a marvelous way. Now that's not my point. My point really is verse 3. Look at this. And there were four leprous men at the entrance of the gate, and they said one to another, why sit we here until we die? If we say we will enter into the city, then the famine is in the city, and we shall die there. And if we sit still here, we die also. Now therefore, come, let us fall into the host of the Syrians. If they save us alive, we shall live, and if they kill us, we shall but die. So we eavesdrop on these four leprous men. Now remember, these leprous men, they were not allowed to go into the city because they had a disease that would contaminate the city. So they were barred to the outside of the city. And as the city would feed, and as they would collect the leftovers, they would pour them over the wall, and the lepers would come and they would pick up any of the leftovers. That's how they would be fed. And if there were no leftovers, well, at least there would be garbage. And they would feed on the garbage. But when there is famine, there's no leftovers. And when there's famine, there's no garbage. And day after day, there was nothing to pour over the wall. And the lepers begin to say, you know, even if we could storm the city, even if we could get through the gate, there's nothing to eat. And if we sit here, we're going to starve. We could take a chance and go down to the enemy and say to the enemy, we surrender. We're yours. Just feed us. Can you imagine hunger that intense? Now the story is incredible. Because it says, according to the story, it says in verse 5, that when they went down to the Syrian camp, they come to the very first tent, they knock on the door, no one's there. They walk in and there's the meal all spread. You know what these starving lepers did? They ate the whole meal and took all the leftovers and hid it. They come back again and they loot another tent and there's no one there. They fill up again. My theory is they must have been teenagers because they come for the third time. And as they're eating, they say, you know, we do a great sin. As we're eating and eating and eating, there's a whole city of people back there, and they're starving. Look at verse 9. Then they said one to another, we do not well. This day is a day of good tidings, and we hold our peace. If we tarry till morning light, some mischief will come upon us. Now therefore come, that we may go and tell the king's household. And they go back, and they knock on the gate and say, hey, open the gate, we got news about food. From the top of the wall, they shout, we're not letting you lepers in. We let you in, we're liable to die. They said, no, look, we've eaten. Open the door, we want to tell you. Finally, they send a messenger out. God had arranged it so that right at mealtime, the enemy would be frightened away. When every tent had the meal right on the table, God sends a noise and they all run, and there it is, food prepared on the table, waiting to be eaten. And if I were an artist, I'd like to draw the scene of verses 9, 10, and 11. Because when the messenger comes back and he says, you're not going to believe it, but there's food. Plenty of food. And I'd draw a picture of the gates of that city being opened and starving people running for food. You know why I love this story? Because I'm one of those leprous men. But I had a disease worse than leprosy. It's called sin. You know that you can have leprosy and go to heaven. But if your sins are never forgiven, you cannot go to heaven. Sin is worse than leprosy. And you see, I live in a country where someone told me the good news of the gospel. Someone told me how to have my sins forgiven. And God saved me. And frankly, once a person gets saved, I don't know that they ever get over the fact that we ought to be telling others the good news of Christ. And I really believe that we ought to be those leprous men. Somehow we ought to go back and we ought to shout and yell as loud as we can to and just point to where there's food. And that's pointing to Jesus, isn't it? And I'll tell you what, no matter how crazy those leprous men might have seemed, to everyone who finally found food, they were glad for the leprous men, weren't they? I think that's my job. I think that's your job. You see, we live in a country where we have been fed so well. We live in a place where we have been fed so well spiritually as well as physically. Listen, we have Bibles. We have Bible conferences. We can talk openly, freely about the Word of God. And folks, do you realize that there are people that have questions about the Word of God? There are people that would just like to see an entire Bible and they've never seen it. Do you realize that in China with 1.2 billion people, that over two-thirds of them do not know the name of Jesus Christ as a Savior at all? Isn't that incredible? How can we who have fared so well, how can we who have eaten so fully from God's good word, how can we do nothing when there's a world around that is starving to hear just His name? I think I'm one of those leprous men. And I believe I really believe that it is my responsibility, since I am so full, since I've been saved so completely, to at least tell one other person all their salvation in Jesus Christ. Is that so hard to do? Is that asking too much of us? Several years ago, a good friend of mine who's a travel agent by his trade, who's actually responsible for me going to Israel every time I've gone, really. And he knows me quite well. I guess since my father passed away, he kind of thinks that he's my father. And I remember coming back from a series of meetings, and I said, "I'm done preaching." He says, "No, you're just tired." I said, "Well, I may be tired, but I'm done. I'm through. I'm not going to travel again." He says, "No, you're just tired." I said, "No, I'm done." And after several months, he began to realize that I really was. And he said, "Why?" And I said, "Well, to be honest, I go places and I speak and I see people take notes. I see people listen, but I don't ever see any difference in their life. So why in the world should I be gone so many weeks? And I'll just stay home and raise my family. I'll just stay home and do a radio program and just work at the school. And I think if I never saw another airport, it would be too soon." He says, "No, you're just," and I said, "No, I'm not going." And so he came to me and he says, "What if I could guarantee that there would be people that would respond?" I said, "Well, you can't, so I'm not going." And I mean, this battle continued for some time. And then finally, he says, "Okay, what if I could promise you that, and so in one of my weaker moments, I said, "All right, I'll go." And he said, "All right, we're going to go to Russia." I said, "Oh, no, no." I said, "You go to Russia." I said, "I don't like cold weather. I don't like snow." Matter of fact, here's what I said. This is embarrassing to confess to you, but I actually said it with my mouth. I said, "I hate Russians. I wish I would have said, I hate communists. I hate communism. But I do not hate Russians." But as the months pursued, well, he finally convinced me to go, and so we went. This was still under the communist regime, by the way. And so we booked ourselves on a ship, and there were 38 Americans and Canadians, believers. There were 10 Jews, and there were 60 communists. And as we went there, we had ordered some books, and the young man that we ordered books from, it was quite unique in the fact that the first time they caught him, the first time he was arrested in Russia, he was arrested for having a Bible study at the university. And so they put him in prison. And after a little period of time, they let him out, And they caught him again having a Bible study, and so this time they put him in Siberia. And he had somehow or another escaped from that, and now he was in the business of supplying Bibles. Some people never learn. He was in the business of supplying Bible to people who dared travel in Russia who wanted to give out Bibles. And so we made provisions to get about 3,000 New Testaments. Because I'd heard that people really wanted Bibles there. But you know, with all the stuff that was involved just to get 3,000 New Testaments, I wasn't sure that we'd ever locate him or the New Testaments. And so in our suitcases, we brought 600 little teeny New Testaments. I'd say about half the size of this book. I mean, just little teeny ones. And in my suitcase, we packed those. And so we went, and the very first day that we got there, that night, it was, now you got to remember that in Russia it's far enough north that it's still daylight at midnight. And so I think it was only 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and so I said to my friend, I said, I'm going to go to Red Square, I'm going to bring half of these Bibles, and I'm just going to see how bad people want Bibles. And so I got a taxi cab, and I went down to Red Square with 300 Bibles, and to be honest, the very first one I handed out, I didn't know what to expect. But it was a policeman. The policeman came down the road, and I thought, well, we might as well see how. I gave it to him. I mean, this guy was so thrilled. I mean, he just stood there paralyzed because he had a New Testament. And he made such a fuss about it that people began to gather around, and before long, I could not give out Bibles fast enough. Soldiers came. I mean, and I had a fellow from Scotland with me. He was a photographer. And, I mean, within a minute, people all over Red Square were holding New Testaments. A soldier would stand up and he'd read it to maybe a group of 30 or 40. He'd sit down. Another man would pick up a Bible, read it, just like it would be in America. And finally, my photographer friend, there was a wedding. You see, it's good luck in Russia on your wedding day to come to Red Square. And they were in a wedding ceremony, and he ran right over, right in the middle of the wedding ceremony, handed a Bible to the bride and the groom. They stopped the whole wedding. They made him turn around, hold the Bible up, and they had his picture in the wedding party because he presented them with a New Testament. Just the way it happens in America, right? And I mean, I was, within 5 minutes, every New Testament I had was gone, and all over Red Square, there were people sitting there reading Bibles or standing up reading. You could not see someone who was not listening to a Bible being read in Red Square. I went home. My friend said, how did it go? I said, you know what, we're going to need more Bibles. And I mean, that night, I the only thought I could think of, is this a dream? Is this really taking place? Are there people really that hungry for a Bible? And on the way back to catch a cab, to go back to the ship, we had a trail of people begging us, please give me a Bible. Please give me a Bible. Where can I get a Bible? And so the next day, later that day, we were to leave on our ship to go down the Volga River. And then we were supposed to have an official tour of Red Square. So I said to my friend, I said, I'm bringing all the rest of the Bibles I've got. I said, there's no way I can turn down people that want New Testaments. I'm bringing them all. So I brought them all, and I said, you know, I said, if I get a chance at lunch, I'm going to call our contact. I'm going to see if I can get a few more Bibles. And so sure enough, when we got to Red Square, I mean, within minutes, every Bible is gone, and all we've got left are tracts. Now, I should mention to you that even though I've been to Russia 9 times, there's not one Russian word I can pronounce. My daughter goes there and learns the language. You know, she was there 9 months. She speaks it fluently. I go there 9 times. I can't say one word. And there's only 2 people out of the whole group of Americans that cannot learn any Russian. I'm one. And there's another dear lady. I'll just call her Mary from Tennessee. Of course, people from Tennessee, you've heard them talk. It's debatable whether they speak English or not. And so as we're there in Red Square, we go to lunch. And at lunch, I say to my friend, I said, I'm going to order a few more Bibles. So I went and I called the contact person, you know, and as I'm talking to him, he says, oh, you're here. I said, yes. And I said, do we have the 3,000? He says, oh, we've got them. And I said, you know where we're going to be? Yes. He said, we've got it all worked out. And I said, by the way, I said, is there any chance that we might be able to get a few more? He said, well, I said, that's a possibility. I said, well, I was wondering if we could get 5,000 more. Oh, he says, yeah, but he said, I think I could arrange. I said, well, really, I was thinking more in terms of 10,000. If we could get 10,000 more. He said, now, he said, I'd have to go to two warehouses. I said, well, if you're going to go to that trouble, if we could get 15,000 more. He said, yeah, I said, it's going to take two trucks. I said, well, if you're going to go to that problem, I said, you know, we'll take 20,000. If we had 20, he says, well, he says, now I got to go hire some young men at the university to load the Bible. I said, if you're going to go to all that trouble, he says, look, how many do you want? I said, how many can you get in two trucks? He says, 30,000. I said, all right, I'll order 30,000. So I hung up, went back to the table. My friend said, did you order some more? I said, yep. I was hoping he wouldn't ask me how many. He said, how many? I said, well, you know, 30 some of them. He said, what did you say? I said, well, 30 some of them. And he says, I thought you said 30,000. I said, well, as a matter of fact, I did. He said, how are you going to pay for them? I said, I don't know. He said, I didn't have to pay for them until I got home. You know, why worry about how you're going to pay for it when you got 2 weeks? You know, and so we had 30,000 on order. Well, after the meal, we went back into Red Square, and during the time in Red Square, I'll just tell you this story to show you how wonderful God is. All the time, I've been to Israel 23 times, never lost a person. My first trip to Russia, the first day, I lose Mary from Tennessee. We cannot find her. I mean, can you imagine when I have to call her folks back home and say, remember Mary? we lost her. And so the rest of the group got on the bus. They went back to the ship. And I looked for 2 more hours for her. Finally, not being able to find her, I took a taxi back to the stop. And there, on the ship, leaning over the side, is Mary from Tennessee. I said, what in the world are you doing here? She said, well, I got lost. I said, that's obvious. And she said, I didn't remember the name of the ship. I didn't know what. So she said, I just had tracks left. And so she said, I got on the subway and I began to hand out tracks. And I said, Lord, you direct me when to get off of the subway. And so I handed out tracks until I was completely done with tracks. And I got off the subway. And when I came up, there was the ship. Now, I'll tell you what. If God can use me, and if God can use Mary in Russia, He can use you. That's my point. Everything we did, God used it for good, in spite of herself. And so we were excited. I mean, we had all of us back. Every New Testament we had was gone. And we were not only going to get our 3,000 Bibles, but we had 30,000 more coming. And so a little later that afternoon, my friend shows up, the first time I'd ever met him, and he said, I've got good news and I've got bad news. I said, well, give me the good news. He says, the good news is we got 30,000 Bibles loaded in two trucks and they're on their way here. I said, if that's the good news, there's no bad news that can make me unhappy. He says, well, he says, we're going to be a little late. He said, the traffic is so bad in Moscow. He said, we're liable to be here. It's liable to be, well, another 4 or 5 hours. I said, that's okay. I said, we're not set to sail until 5. We'll just go and tell the captain we may be a little late. So I went to the captain through an interpreter. I said, you know, we have some books that are coming. Didn't want to say Bibles. I said, we have some books coming in, and we may be a little late. And he says, no, he says, we leave on time. I said, no, you don't understand. These books are very important. He says, you don't understand. We have 14 locks to go through to get on the Volga River, and we cannot be late. I said, well, if you don't let the books on, we're getting off. He says, I welcome you to get off. It wasn't exactly the way I'd planned it. So I said to my friend, I said, Gail, go up in the library, get every one of our group on their knees and cry out to God to change the heart of the captain. That's all we could do. And my young friend who sold us the Bible said, may I speak to the captain? I said, well, we've been talking to him for the last 30 minutes. It won't do any good, but you're welcome to. He went in, and within 15 seconds he came back and he said, the captain will wait. I said, what did you tell him? I told him the books that you're waiting for are Bibles. This would be the Bible ship. And he said, for Bibles I will wait, if you'll give me 3. 3 Bibles. Now, he said, I'll wait until 6:30. And you should have seen us watching our clocks. And around the corner comes the first truck. Now, I didn't tell him there were 2 trucks. I just told him about 1. There's no sense to tell them all the stuff, is there? And as we're unloading this, as a matter of fact, I've got a video, and I'm going up and down the line. I'm saying, slow down, slow down. I'm hoping that you know, the second truck will arrive as we're unloading the first truck. And I'm not kidding when I say we're on the last row of boxes when around the corner comes the second truck, and we don't miss one stroke of unloading those boxes. There were so many. I mean, the captain, he had no idea. Do you know how many, 30, I'll just give you a hint. See this space up here? It would fill this probably three or four times over. That's how many Bibles we had. Well, they wouldn't let us put them inside the ship. I had to put them all around the outside. That doesn't matter. God is able. And we'd sit out there, and we'd highlight John 3:16. We'd put a track in every one of them. And then as soon as we'd stop at a city, our plan was to jump off and to hand out Bibles as quick as we could. And when the ship left, we'd jump back on, and we'd start highlighting John 3:16. That's all we knew to do. But you know what? My God is so big that His word will never return to Him void. And as we're unloading those last boxes, well, someone dropped a box. And all over that pier, those Bibles scattered. And you should have seen the people come when they found out there were Bibles. As a matter of fact, word got down to the other end of the pier that there were Bibles there. And a big, long, black limousine came. And my interpreter was so excited. She said, "This is a Russian movie star." And this guy wanted a Bible, and I gladly gave him a Bible, and he went off, and within a couple minutes, the big black car comes again. He says, "Can I have a few more Bibles?" And I gave him a couple more Bibles. I said, "Wait a minute, let me give you some tracts to explain that Bible." And I gave him that, and within a couple minutes, here comes the big, long black car again. Another man coming. Wanted more Bibles, more tracts. I said, "Now, wait a minute." I said, "Are you just collecting Bibles?" "Oh," he said, "oh, no." He said, "We shut down." He said, "We're not filming anymore today." He said, "We're just reading Bibles." Just like Hollywood. Do you see that there are people that are starving for this word? And we have it. Here's the question, do we read it? And we begin to realize what a treat we're in for. I remember one old babushka. I guess I do know a Russian word, babushka. Oh my, are they something? Don't ever underestimate how strong they are either. You know, when you say no, no more Bibles, and they grab one, you might as well forget it because they can whip you. I mean, they are survivors. And I remember this dear old grandma, she was carrying her boxes, and of course I'm trying to say Edipodaric, which I think says free Bible, but it probably says, "Do you eat dog food?" I mean, I just do not have a knack for languages, you know? And so I'm saying Edipodaric, and she's looking at me like, "What planet are you from?" And so finally I take a Biblia, and I put it right on the top of her sack, and she sees it's a Bible. And she drops her sacks, and tears begin to come out of her eyes, and she grabs me around the legs, and I cannot get loose. And finally, when everyone's left, and they're wondering where I am, my interpreter runs over to rescue me. And so she begins to speak to this lady. And this dear lady, weeping so hard and caressing that Bible, she puts her hand down on the sack, and she's fishing around, and she comes out with bread. She gives me that bread. I said, "No," I said, I can't take the bread. And I'm refusing the bread, and the lady is crying, and she's forcing it, and she makes me smell the bread. It's still warm. And I said, "No, I cannot take our bread." And finally the interpreter says, "You must take our bread." Because she's saying, if she has a Bible, why should she eat when she now has a Bible? Is that the way we feel about the Word of God? And we got on board that ship. We go to one city after another. Been 6 years since that trip, and there are still moments that I weep as I think of those people. I think of a city where we stopped. We handed out every Bible we had. You see, what we do is we load up every Bible we could. Now, finally, the group was so divided, they would furnish one bus for the crazy Americans who had Bibles, and another one for the communists, and another one for you can imagine the 10 Jews. You know how much they wanted to be with us. Actually, the communists treated us much kinder than the Jews. And before the trip was over, we became very good friends. And some of those communists came to know the Lord, some of their children especially, because we began to have children's meetings on board the ship every day. We had some people with us from child evangelism, and it was marvelous. But I remember in the city, we gave out every Bible we had. And each of us had a little pouch, and we'd load those pouches with Bibles, and we'd carry boxes, and the bus would let us off, and they would all go to the shopping places, and to the art places, and we'd say, no, put us down in the middle of the bus stops. And we'd unload those things, we'd open up a box, and we'd start giving out Bibles, and in a few minutes, all you'd have are empty boxes. If we had time, we'd run back and get more. And I remember as we stopped at this city, we'd given out everything we had, and the people were lined up to get these. And I mean, just as fast as you could hand them out, they were taking them. And I remember as we ran out, I'm trying to explain, I'm sorry, I don't have any more. I remember the second little girl in line. I would say she was about 8 years old or maybe 9. And her eyes looked at me as if to say, why didn't you give me a Bible? So I went back on the bus and I said, does anyone have a Bible? And one lady said, oh, she said, I've still got one in my pouch. And by the time she dug that out and I looked for the little girl and her mother, they'd gone down about 2 blocks. So I ran down to where she was. And when she saw me coming, she knew what I was going to do. I'll tell you, it was an incredible time. I gave her the Bible and turned around to come back. And as I was coming back, I was handing out the tracts that I had. And by the time I got back to the bus, I couldn't believe it because there she was standing at the bus. She'd beat me back to the bus. And she was looking for me on the bus. And when she saw me coming, they pointed to me and she ran. And about 12 feet away, she jumped and she got me right around the neck. And she gave me a little handkerchief. I carried it with me for a long time. Now I have it at home. I'm afraid I will lose it. But I would say it's about this big. And she said, this is the most valuable thing I have. She said, I want you to have it. Because now I have a Bible. How precious is the Word of God to us? And you get back on a bus and you leave a throng of people that are embracing a Bible. For some, the first Bible they have seen ever. And all you can pray is, oh God, when we have been fed so great, how can we not tell people there's food, there's spiritual food in Jesus Christ? We went to another place. It wasn't a scheduled stop. I think it was of the Lord that we stopped there. We stopped there for something for the ship. So they said it will take us a few hours to get things ready. It was raining that day. I remember that Sharon put a raincoat in my stuff. I know it was an ugly one because no one at home would wear it. It was probably one of those bright orange things. And so I said to Gail, I said, I can't stand it on the ship any longer. I said, I'm going to hand out Bibles. So I took 2 boxes of Bibles up on my shoulder like that. I had the raincoat draped over me and I started walking up a hill. Now I have a bad knee. And I went into a supermarket and in the supermarket, I couldn't believe it because there were only 3 products. There was something that looked like ketchup, but it was much darker. There was another thing called potatoes that were extremely small. You might call it a bean, but they called it a potato. And then I don't know whether they called it lettuce or worms because there was an equal amount of both. That was the total amount of food for that place. I went to the hardware store and I was amazed because I saw these things where you could squeeze the handle and you generate enough power to light a flashlight. I said, these would be fantastic souvenirs. I think they were about 6 cents a piece. And so I picked up a dozen. And then I looked, I was the only person in line that had more than one item. I thought, how in the world can I buy these for souvenirs when these people depend on these things just to live? I put them back. I picked up my boxes and I began to walk. And as I walk up the hill, I prayed a prayer. I hope you won't think it was sacrilegious. But I prayed, God, send me a car because my knee hurts. And send me someone that speaks English. And within 10 seconds, a car pulls right in front of me. A young college kid rolls the window down and says, you want to buy some souvenirs in perfect English? I said, I'll buy them all if you'll give me a ride and be my interpreter. He says, get in. When I got in, it was like getting in an ashtray. I mean, everyone in Russia smokes. And so I said, okay, the first thing is the 2 college kids in the back said they got to put their cigarettes down. And so I said, all right, what did I buy? I bought the world's franchise of black lacquer Russian boxes. I think they're marvelous. My wife hates them. They're so good. She got them for Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, birthday, Christmas. I bought them all. And I didn't even bargain on the price. He says, what do you have in your boxes? I said, Bibles. He says, can we ever sell those? I said, no, we're going to give them away. And I said, you're going to be my interpreter. And so I said, take me to a school. He said, well, we don't have a school in this city. I said, well, just take me where there's a lot of people. He took me right to the police station. Oh, that's good. Can you imagine? Those policemen were so excited to see those Bibles. And so we gave out Bibles. And then we went to the post office. Now, I need to explain, in the post office, they don't design them for Americans. A couple times I had to go to a post office, you know, and there's a line of 100 people. The stamps are less than 2 cents. Less than 2 cents. And here we are waiting. Everyone buys one stamp or two stamps. I said to my interpreter, I said, get up there, buy 500 stamps, give them whatever they want, we're in a hurry. No, you can't do that. I said, oh, yes, you can. I said, it's nothing. Buy the stamps. No, you wait in line. Oh, boy. Just, that wasn't on this particular post office, but, you know, I'm used, when I drive through these food places, I wish they had a speed window. I do not like to wait. You can imagine me in Russia. It's just terrible. Well, anyway, we went to the post office. There were people that had been in line for an hour to mail a package. When he announced free Bibles, they all left their place in line and came to get a Bible. And so we left there, and I said, take me to another. And so we went to the bus station. And so there, I mean, within minutes, we gave out every Bible I had. And so I took my pen. I wrote a note. I said, now tell your friends to bring this back to the ship. And on the note, I said to my friend back on the ship, I said, load in all the boxes of Bibles you can into this car and send them to me. And so they went off back to the ship to get more Bibles. And I said to this guy, I said, okay, now you're going to be my interpreter. And so, I mean, bus loads were coming, and word got around that if you stay, you're going to get a Bible. And I mean, before long, you cannot, as far as I could see, there were people. I began to explain to them that heaven is God's home and God is holy. God doesn't want sin. He doesn't want sin in heaven. But all of us have sinned. We've all lied. We've all stolen. We've all cheated. So how can we ever go to heaven? And I say, well, that's why Jesus came. That's why Jesus died on the cross. He shed his blood. But not only did Jesus die on the cross, but Jesus resurrected. And when I came to that part of the story, my interpreter said, they won't believe you. I said, no, your job is just, you just tell them, Jesus died and now he's alive. He said, they're not going to believe you. You see, the Orthodox Church does not believe in resurrection. They speak of him dying. They do not speak of his resurrection. And so here we are arguing back and forth, and the people are wondering, what are they fighting about? And finally, he tells them, Jesus is alive. And they looked at me, and they looked at him, and they looked at me. And for the first time, they found out that Jesus was alive. And I tell you, what a thrill, right there at a Russian bus stop, to be able to present people with the truth that their sins can be forgiven. In a few minutes, the car came, and we gave out Bibles to everybody there, and we had a box or two left. I said, is there any other place to go? And he said, well, there's a hospital. So we went into the hospital, and as we went into the first room, there's a sight and a smell I'll never forget. The rooms were probably a little wider than this podium, and maybe 6 or 8 feet deep. No mattress, just a piece of cardboard on the floor. And as we went in, he explained to the man, this is a gift. The Bible is yours. I saw that man with a part of his face eaten away, begin to cry, with trembling hands, get that